something. Oh, 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 yeah, we up to something. Yeah, we up to something. Hey, y'all, it's episode 74 of the Swerve City Podcast. TZ had to be in the building. We're not even at the usual studio. You see where we at. We are actually at the arena here in St. Louis. The Chaffetz Arena.
I don't know, man.
I can't tell
the you. The Chaffetz Arena.
Now I'm like walking and looking at the catering. I'm like, I've been here before.
That's how I gauge
that's how time. It gets it down.
Yeah. Or where the parking lot is to pull in.
Yes.
Yeah.
But those are starting to like all blend together too. Sure. Like, security gates are all the same. Some are assholes.
But I remember this one. I do remember this one. Yeah, because we were here like 2 months ago or something like that.
It was 2 months ago.
Yeah.
He's been doing this too long. He's the expert at this thing. And we're going to get to that very shortly. This is actually earlier in the day for the pay-per-view Dynasty. TNT champion Mr. Adam Copeland is here. But I'll be going to the main event tonight for the world championship. By the time you see this episode, who knows? Might be the champion by then. That's the special thing about this. You get some really exclusive stuff beforehand. TZ flew all the way in from Tampa to be here tonight.
Tampa.
Awesome pay-per-view. Dynasty, the card is stacked. How was your journey? How was your thing? How was all this
first of all, together? Life is good. We are 74 episodes in. We are 7 years in of doing this. It's been a long grind with us. But we are continuing to give you guys exclusive content. Once again, Swerve City Podcast. Hit to subscribe, comment, share. Make sure you guys show love. We in here with a legend, man. One of the GOATs, man, to ever do this.
Man, this is a man that's truly, truly inspired me from the day I started training. I was studying his tapes. I still have his book in my home that I read 15 years ago. I need to bring it to him so he can sign it. And officially, I'm like, I read this book, and this is where I started learning the whole craft of pro wrestling. 15 years ago, this man is 11-time world champion.
Yeah.
How many Manias, main events? How many?
Two.
Some small. Trailblazer. The reason why we do the style that we do today, like the reason why I'm as crazy as I am doing what I was doing in the backyard because of watching this man here. If you look back, hopefully I can find this picture and I'll give it to you guys so you can post and edit it. There's a photo. I remember this poster you did of you falling off the building.
Matrix style.
I literally did that same thing in a photo shoot, and I was like a little baby child with I'll show you. I'll find it and give it to you guys. But this right here, my man, my mentor, Adam Copeland, everybody, TNT champion of AEW. Give a round of applause. You two in the back. Come on, everybody clap. This is a momentous occasion right now.
We finally made it happen.
Yes.
It took some work. It took some here, there, and everywhere. Yes. But I'm finally here.
Oh, God.
On a big day.
And the fact that I got my co-host here.
Like, yeah.
That's very rare.
On a big day.
Big day.
This is a big one.
So. The fact that you're taking time out to talk to us is... it's amazing.
The fact that you're taking time out.
You know.
You got a big match.
It's pretty big, yeah.
It's a big one.
It's a big one. But like even earlier this week talking with you about like the opportunity that I'm about to have, things are changing.
Yeah.
Like opportunities, people around you are starting to morph a little bit. The emotions, like TZ's gone through it too in the music industry. The more he does, the more certain energies change, shift around you. I know you've been through this. Like, you talk about it yourself or what you've seen or
My goal was always not to change. And if people around me change, then that was on them.
Right.
So it really, even when I came in, if anyone ever called me Edge, I was like, no, Adam.
Yep.
Edge's character I play on television. Now with AEW, it gets a little different because I'm Adam Copeland, but I'm Adam Copeland. Okay. So it can get a little confusing. Like I did career day at the girls' school.
Yes.
So I walk in there, put a belt down, I put the book down, all this stuff, and I started trying to explain to them that we're storytellers.
Yeah.
That we're just like a movie, just like a TV show, just like a book. Pick your medium. And I said, we play characters, we're storytellers. I just happen to play the character of Adam Copeland. And my name is Adam Copeland. And they just went, like, now they didn't believe a word I was saying. They're like, okay, whatever. Like, third graders, right? Third graders give me the side eye. And I'm like, I know it's confusing. I'm sorry. Yeah. But yeah, man, this is any time that you start to make strides, right?
Yeah.
you'll find that there's people that will suddenly start coming around, mm-hmm. or there will be people that resent. And there's nothing you can really do. You know, you just, for me, it was always, okay, stay true to what you are. Your gut compass should probably lead you. And yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's not all in your control. It's like sometimes the system, the machine, sure. like that's the direction they want.
Yeah.
So it's like, sorry, I can't apologize for yeah. what the machine wants to do with you. To your friends and your people, your families and whoever.
And in my way of thinking is if they're true friends, they'll understand, true. You know, and also be happy for you too, you know. Exactly. And that was one of the things with Jay growing up and, you know, knowing each other from the sixth grade on, we're always happy for each other's accomplishments. Yes. And you'd get other people that would compare us. And we're like, why would you, we're mm-hmm. best friends. Why would you compare us?
Right.
Like, that makes no sense to me. We're both supporting each other. And propping each other up, but sometimes, you know, society, especially now with social media and everything, it wants to tear stuff down.
And it's a lot of the comment section just wants to start chatter, and now the engagement farming thing become a thing.
Yeah.
So like now everybody wants to just get a lot of traffic for negativity
yeah.
because that gets the most
yep.
reactions and the most responses, man.
To add to that point, you know, you and Jay have been friends so long, and you brought him up. You know, me and his brothers have been around each other almost a decade. And, you know, seeing friends, especially in the entertainment business, is really, really tough.
Yep.
You know, for some people to stay together or,
yep.
you know, things can get into play. What has kept that bond together so long? When you see people split each and every day. What keeps that yeah. bond together?
I think for us, it was the fact that we met in the sixth grade.
Yeah.
So it was pre-everything. It was pre-WWF, pre-WWE, it was pre-money, it was pre-all of it, right?
Right.
And I think we both understood that if we had each other's backs, we could keep each other sane,
mm-hmm.
and keep each other solid, and check each other.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Check each other, the fact like, oh man, being a bit of a dick, you know?
Mm.
And
being able to take that.
And take it, yeah. because he wouldn't say it. Unless it were the case.
True.
You know what I mean?
True.
So I think more than anything, that's the main reason. And you know, just we're two kids from Southern Ontario with no in to this industry at all.
Right.
And we kind of made our in together. So you go through a bunch of stuff like that, and you go up and down enough roads, and you drive across enough supposedly frozen lakes, and you know,
oh, yeah.
all of that stuff, just it builds a bond that, you know, can never get broken, you know.
Exactly.
And there's guys that I trained with that, you know, I barely see or talk to anymore that were on those same roads.
Yeah.
But Jay and I think it's because we repree all of that.
Absolutely.
So I think that's why.
You know, it's funny, like, we talk about, like, bonds, like, being together from the beginning and then breaking apart. What I'm seeing a lot now on social media, if you're checking on it, I don't know, but I know fans of ours are watching the show, the music industry.
Yeah.
What we're seeing, like, a lot of people are, like, if you're not caught up on things, like, there's diss records going out right now.
Okay.
And you're seeing, like, you know, Kendrick Lamar, you know, with Drake.
Yeah, okay. Two. Even I saw that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
We're just saying something because I'm just all about the new Pearl Jam album. So.
Right.
Shout out to Eddie Vedder.
Which I was going to bring that up. Like you're seeing, like guys are starting. Like I'm like, you guys been like at the top for like 10 years now.
Yeah.
Like there's no dispute. Like just top threes like Cole, Drake, and friggin' Kendrick.
Yeah.
It's no dispute. But now it's like now there's sides are starting to form, and this now these like people are like Rick Ross is getting involved. Then you see Kanye say something. Now you see this guy come in and say something, and now you're seeing like sides being formed. Like, why does that not happen in rock bands? Have you ever heard of any stories in rock bands of like guys that were just being dicks to each other, even though you're like they're like top of the industry?
I mean, yeah. Usually you'll hear like
that's comes in the band.
It comes down to the songwriting.
Yeah.
Because then you're looking at the royalties and
right.
Well, now that's a whole different ballgame, right?
But that's like within the band. Have you ever seen two other bands, would you say
beef
like,
with each other?
That like, beef? Have you ever heard of any stories like this?
Man.
It's like Metallica is not messing with freaking I know. Judas
Metallica
Priest.
Metallica wants to fight Pantera.
Yeah, like yeah, have you ever seen like that?
I don't think so.
I know. Yeah, the only one I've really heard of was Guns N' Roses and Nirvana.
Nirvana.
At that time.
That was true. I remember that one.
But normally, like...
Like, who's Motley Crue beefing with?
Like, if anything...
Their makeup company. I don't know. Like,
if anything, they're beefing. If they are beefing, they're beefing over stage time because somebody just killed it and they got to go after it. Yeah. With you guys, you know, being wrestling, you know, you guys trying to, you know, put on the next match. But you, like you said, naturally, it's with each other instead of just...
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
But it's wild to me. It's like when everybody's at the top and there's still something to beef about. That's what was
wrong. Yeah. Like, well, you know, I don't know. I guess it's a competitive. You get creative people. Mm-hmm. And you got those creative bones. And a lot of times creative people are also very sensitive.
Agreed.
Very true.
Agreed.
And that means every emotion.
Yeah.
So that can, you know, whether it's with actors, whether it's musicians, whether it's wrestlers, whether, you know, pick your poison. Creative people are tend to be very emotional.
I think that's when I think ego drives the music and drives the art.
Yeah.
Like sometimes wrestlers, the ego's driving the character.
Sure.
The ego's driving the work, like the, you know, a lot of actors and performers, you know, you've seen it. Keith over here, Keith Lucas over here, my brother, works in Hollywood and has Oscars. And I'm pretty sure he's seen ego drives certain performers to go on camera. Like, they need that.
Some people do need that.
Yeah.
And I mean, some don't.
Right. Some need to come out of it.
Yeah.
To come down to the earth.
Well, and how many stories do you hear of, you know, actors really dropping into their character?
Yep.
You know, whether it's Heath Ledger, you know.
Andy Kaufman's.
Andy Kaufman's of the world, you know, or Jim Carrey playing Andy Kaufman.
Yep. Inception.
And I get it, you know, like even, you know, when I did Vikings, man, there were some days where I'd get off set, I'd have dried blood, you know, in my hands. I had this big old beard, you know, like snot in it because I've just been out on a boat all day and I can't blow my nose because I have a nose prosthetic on. And then I go to Starbucks and they look at me like, what the fuck? And I'm like, oh no, sir, I'm not the Unabomber, honestly. Like,
I just want a number three.
I just give me a venti, please. It's been a long day.
Oh, actually, I'm very interested in that. Like talking about Vikings, the roles you played on that, like that experience. Like, do you think like wrestling, like transitioning to that? Would you have to take some methods that you took from there and brought them into that world, or do you have to just completely leave it and start afresh and anew?
It wasn't totally fresh, you know, because I've always said, so like, if you're looking at a tree, this branch is wrestling, this branch is music, this branch is acting, this branch is writing, but it's all the same tree. And
we speak about this all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how much more.
They give you the codes. I don't know.
But for me, when I just had to learn the different elements with acting, and that was bringing it down and pulling it back.
Okay.
You know, with wrestling, everything's big. Everything has to be huge.
Right.
Everything could be a football field worth of people away.
Yeah.
So everything has to be bigger, and it's a little bit theater of the absurd. So the eyes are bigger, the emotions are bigger, everything's bigger. So when I first started getting my coverage and my close-ups, I had this one director, Lee Rose, came up to me. She was, "What are you doing with your eyes?"
I remember you said this.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And I went, "I don't know, what am I doing?" She was, "I don't know, stop doing it." And I went, "Man, okay, well, can you show me?"
Right.
And she showed me, and I looked just, because it's like here, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going, I'm like, oh, yeah, I look like a maniac.
Yeah, you need to be so much more subtle.
I got to pull this back
and
tell more with my eyes subtly, as opposed to, you know, big and blah.
Right.
So that was a learning curve. Yep. But then once I learned that, bringing that back here was kind of cool.
Okay.
So bringing that back to wrestling and bringing in more nuances, especially as the pandemic hit, because now I got a camera sitting right here and I'm essentially doing a monologue. Mm-hmm. So now I can play with some of those skills that I learned with on set. And I know there's no audience to start chanting or make noise.
Not true. I was there.
It's
I was in there. I was that audience.
But it was much more personal. I think. And I actually enjoyed that aspect of the pandemic. If you were going to try and find some positives, that to me, in terms of performing, was the one that I really enjoyed. I hated wrestling in front of no one, but I really liked doing promos. I called them monologues, almost like auditions. You're almost in auditioning.
It felt like, you know? it looked like a self-tape.
Yeah.
Some of them look like that.
And it was like the first pandemic show we did was in the PC, and I was the first segment live on Raw, and I was kind of promo. And it was about 10 seconds before, and Sweaty was the camera guy in the ring. I was like, Sweaty, I got to come down the barrel.
Yep.
I have to. But I made that choice 10 seconds before, because otherwise, what am I going to do? Stare at empty walls. I can't talk to them. Right. I got to talk straight down there. And we're usually told not to do that, right? Yep. So that was interesting. That was, and it was actually fun to explore it and work with what we had, which wasn't much at that point, right? So like even with the greatest wrestling match ever, and I was like, man, what a ridiculous title.
I remember talking to you before, and I'm like, where'd you start?
What does that even mean? Like, there's no such thing as the greatest anything. Like, you know,
where's the bar for this? And how do you?
I can just imagine the jokes between you two.
Oh, dude, we were just like, what? Like, hey, not only you're calling it this, right? It's also my like second match back in 10 years.
Yeah.
And we have no fans. You know, we ended up having some of the, you know, NXT folk there, but still, it was like, this is ridiculous.
Imagine naming the song the greatest song ever.
Yeah, right?
It better sell.
If it's tongue-in-cheek, okay.
Right.
This was not tongue-in-cheek.
You can't.
No, it was tongue-in-cheek to me and Randy.
Oh,
but,
yes.
But, man, it was, I just remember, so I'm driving down, because I was driving down my pickup at that point. So I'm driving, I'm like, okay, how do we do this? Just make it a love letter to wrestling. Mm-hmm. Okay, if we make it a love letter to wrestling, so that means Charles, long sleeve, bow tie, you know, we'll have the MSG thing come down, we'll have Howard announce us, and then...
Which, that was awesome to see that live.
And that's all we could try and do, right, is just try and show, okay, this is a love letter to this thing that we love to do. And that meant bringing in finishers from some of our rivals and, you know, and just trying to tell the story that way. And then I had the great idea to do some GoPro pickup shots, right? So
having to react to those.
Oh my God.
Oh!
Yeah.
The camera just going.
So, and it all started with, I was like, ooh, if I took an RKO with a GoPro on my head and you showed that in a replay, people are going to, okay, that's what it feels like taking RKO, because that move is violent.
It is.
It's like, really, really violent.
People don't give enough credit for how vicious it can be.
It's violent. And so we did the match. I think we ended up going 48 minutes. Get to the back, and like, you guys went 48 minutes? Like, really? That kind of flew. Okay. And so then we said, okay, I guess the pickup shots, I mean, I feel pretty good about that, but we can just have him in to put him in his replays, I'm thinking.
Right.
So we get in, we start doing them. There was about an hour 20 in between, so we both cooled down. And we're getting ready to do the RKO, right? So I know Randy's back's bugging him. It's also really, you know, it's a high bump where he kind of lands on his lower back, so I'm really focusing on that. I also have a GoPro on my head. So a lot of things going on here. Landed, boom, felt my tricep pop.
Dang, I remember that.
And I went, oh, okay, because while I was retired, I had my wrist fused too. So my wrist doesn't bend.
And what? Oh, I see the incision.
It just doesn't bend.
Camera that. So, crazy.
Yeah. So it won't go that way. It'll go that way though. But when you go to bump,
you have to flatten.
And you can't.
Oh.
And that's when my tricep realized.
Oh my God.
There's no bend there, so pow.
The body's telling something to the wrist.
Yes.
Right back to it.
Don't take RKOs. So. We finished the pickup shots, right? We had like four more. And then I got home, had the surgery. I'm sitting there on the couch, and they sent me the match, but just the match without the pickup shots. I was like, I love it. Let's just leave straight match with what we did.
Yeah.
But somebody else loved the pickup shots. Mm-hmm. And I really, like, it takes me out of it. Because then they sent it to me with the man, and I was like, no, it totally takes me out of it.
Yeah.
Like, we went 48 straight through, just leave it.
Yeah.
And and then, you know, they throw in those pickup shots, and then people start saying, oh, we cut multiple versions. We didn't. We did it. You were there. Mm-hmm. We did it once.
Fine.
And then went in and did four pickup shots where I tore my tricep.
You know something, man? I have to give you a roses on something. Because I'm going to give a shout out to my childhood friends. I just have to say this. I normally don't say this on the podcast, but me, shout out to my man Josh. I know you're going to watch this. Shout out.
I know
out.
Who you are, Josh. But
shout out to my man Kavana. We used to be in my grandmother's house. My grandmother's right outside there. And we used to reenact in our house TLC 2000. and I was always Christian, and he was always Adam. And it was always a great experience. But I have to ask you this, because I noticed this from being a young lad watching. You've had the greatest gear, dude. Like, your gear, the trench coats. Lord. You've always was ahead of your time, man. And in the gear and the way things look with the long trench coat. I always remembered when, we'll get to your entrance music in a second, too. You come out, you had the long trench coat, the long hair, the glasses, and even when you went on your solo runs, and even now when you come out now, Adam, talk about your gear, the influences behind your gear, because you was always ahead of your time with that.
One thing I will add to the gear thing, like, I just saw it recently, like, maybe earlier this week, the long star stripe.
Yeah.
Going into the kick pad.
The racing stripe. Yeah.
I'm like, that's very clever and very, like, risky to do, to pull off.
It was asymmetrical, right? So
it can throw people off. Like you're saying, it could throw you off, and it could be, in wrestling, we have to be big.
Yeah.
Big, colorful lights, this, like, sparkles and everything. I always thought that was the simplicity is what made that so unique.
For me, the whole presentation of your character starts the second you come through that curtain. The second your music hits, even before you come through the curtain.
Absolutely.
So that's why, speaking of music, to me, music is so important. I've always been so hands-on with it because it sets the tone, not only for the audience, but it does for me, too. Like, I want to come up with something that I feel, you know, and resonates with me and actually means something to me. Not just the character, but the person, too. Anything that I found works has to have an element of truth, and a truth to Adam the person and Adam the character, which, again, so confusing. But that's when things work best for me. When I can tap into some truth, and usually the fiction should then follow the truth and make it feel a little more real. In terms of the gear, man, I was that kid in grade school. You've probably seen all the drawings on the documentaries. Like, I would just sit there and draw.
Yes.
I'd draw gear. Jay can't draw, so I'd draw his gear. And so I had probably about 200 different sets of stuff, which actually came to see the light of day over the years. My first WWF match, May 10th, 1996, and I wore white with stars, little black tassels, black band, and that's one of the drawings, and there it was coming to life. So now, over the years, what I've tried to do is basically make it feel post-apocalyptic. Almost Mad Max.
I can see that.
Yeah, I see that.
The coats, okay. For sure.
Yeah. But then throw some rock and roll in there. Mm-hmm. And now I wanted to transition a little bit like Grindhouse feel. So there's always a method to the idea. And I really just, I enjoy it so much. I love it. I love designing stuff.
You design it.
I draw it all out. And I'll send it to my lady, does my coats. And then she puts her magic on it, and then my tights guy, I was like, okay, here's the color combo, it's this design, da, 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 and I'll hand draw it out.
That's so dope.
And
has your drawing improved?
I was always pretty good at drawing. You know,
man, we gotta match art, man.
From the time I was a kid, it was drawing dinosaurs, then it was drawing hockey goalies, then it was drawing Kiss, then it was drawing superheroes, then it was drawing wrestlers.
My drawing was Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles, or okay. Sonic. That was my three.
Yeah.
I could draw them, like, without looking at nothing. It was just, boom, I could riff them.
Yeah.
And you didn't draw much.
I tell you, man, I draw a mean yin-yang, man. You know what I mean? Like, I drew a mean.
Upside down, like, left side up.
I was more into, like, you know how some people, like when I was little, I don't know if you guys, well, obviously Adam probably remembers, There was like those stencil things that we used to have.
Oh yeah.
Those stencil. Those were the things I used to be really good at. When I had the stencil and like the tracers and I could like figure out what I was doing, dude, I was fired. But if you took that thing away,
I need a rail. I need a railway.
I still, you know, like, gosh, it was Ric Flair's 70th birthday, and I was like, what do you get Ric Flair? Maybe I'll paint him something. So, So then I start trying to mix mediums, and I go, okay, right. If I get a stencil here with Flair, and if I use some spray paint, and then what if I get a boa, and I put it around the, and it's very pop art.
Right.
And then what if I get some Swarovski crystals in here?
Wow. Oh, you're crafty.
I'm like that craft guy. Like, what? I'm like, girls, you want to go to Michael's? Like, I'm that guy.
Oh, man. Oh, that was just at Michael's.
So, I still, to this day, I love doing stuff like that. Yeah. And even like with our house, like I decorated it. Beth just goes, you do it. Because you got a vision. I know you got a vision. Just go for it.
You know, I have a question, man. And, you know, we're all fathers in here. Those three on the couch, at least. Are you guys fathers?
Hope not.
That you know of.
Yeah. Gotcha. One day. How was it, man, that experience, man, being a father? Obviously, you're a girl, dad. Man. But being a father, man, it humbles us. In a spirit, I got three knuckleheads and one girl. And don't worry, everybody, I'm done. how does that, you know, how is that, man, being a father, man, that experience? I know being in this game, entertainment game, we're on the run. We're always moving.
Sure.
And then when you start having kids, you start not only coming to peace with your mortality, you know, and, you know, you have someone to live for, but just, you know, it changes you. So how has fatherhood been for you?
It's the absolute best thing that I've ever been a part of. Mm-hmm. It suddenly you realize it's not about you. And up until that point, especially if you're in these types of industries, it kind of has to be about you, right? So what I was thankful for is that I was retired when we had the girls.
Mm-hmm. Mm, so you was able to spend time with
them. So I was there. I was
that's a blessing.
I was stay-at-home dad and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. What I realized, though, is I also need to keep that side of Adam that loves to create. Because if I keep that side and I still tap that vein, I'm going to be a better father. Because I'll be more of a whole person. Yeah. As opposed to just being known as Lyric and Ruby's dad. And I'm okay with that. But I want to be able to still do other things, too. And hopefully, by proxy, they see the work ethic. And they see the work that goes into this thing that you don't need to do anymore. You do it because you love it. Mm-hmm. You know, they understand, I don't have to wrestle anymore. I wrestle because I really love this, you know. And there's nothing else I ever wanted to do. So that's what I hope they pull from it, from me going back. But, man, being a dad is the best thing ever. It really is, just to see them blossom and just try and water those seeds and see where they go. And the conversations that end up happening now as they get older and now they're in Shakespeare Club and we run the drama club at the girls' school. So we do the drama club and we're hands-on with everything. Beth, that's awesome. Beth painted the school with her friend. Like we're those parents, right? We're like there, what do you need? Okay. We're those people, and I love being those people.
Yes.
I really do. I love being involved in every aspect of their lives. I want them to know every second going forward that they can always come to me, you know, and they have to know that I am a sounding board for them that may not always agree, but I'll always listen.
One of the coolest things as a father was, like, they got the age that they're getting curious.
Yeah.
So you just let them go, and then I'll watch. And let's see what they discover, and just follow them around. Like, especially when they got to shopping and the mall and stuff. For me,
you're ahead of me too.
Oh yeah. So, which is crazy, because like
I know.
Yeah, it's crazy because like the mothers, they be like, when it's I come into town, I'm like, all right, I'm taking them shopping. They don't tell me nothing. They're like, Dad's got shopping. Good.
Yeah.
I'm a good shopper for my girls. Well, I'm really good at it.
And there's certain things that we as dads bring to the table that moms don't, and vice versa.
For sure.
You know, it's a different energy. It's just different, right? And you do feel the fallout, like, because I'm the cuddle. you know, yeah. I'm the big hairy cuddly guy, right? Or I'm whatever different things I bring to the table. So Ruby and I will sit and watch sunsets together. That's our thing.
That's nice.
They also love sitting and watching hockey with me. I think just purely because they know I love hockey so much. It's not because they really care, but so it's. I love it so much. I realized that I was put here to be a girl dad. Mm-hmm. I really realized once we had the girls, I was like, oh, okay, my wiring was set for having little girls. Yep. Because the boys come over and they're barbarians, and I'm like, you.
You don't have the patience for the boys.
No. Ooh. So I know my son, he'd be an asshole like me, and we'd just, yep. We'd be doing that.
Bro.
So.
Hey. He's the woman of the boys. He's the woman of the boys. My nephew gets lippy, and I'm like, woo.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there, man, we're playing, watching our kids playing Fortnite, but he's like, my son is 13. He's like, grab a controller, man. I know you washed. I know you're done. I know you can't play no more. I'm like, oh, where?
Yeah.
And the man of me is like, oh, so you're trying to come for the life. I said, bro, I said, look, when you're 18, I said, 13, when you're 18, you can have the crown. I'm about done anyway. So you can have the crown. But you're going to try me now. Like, I still got some in the tank. I mean, I'm not Jordan Duncan. I'm Jordan with the jump shot now.
Wizards Jordan right now.
I still got some. It's going to take me a little longer to get to 40. But I can get there more efficiently now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But with that, we're gamers, so like I'm realizing, oh, my reflexes are a little slow just on games and reaction time on games. My girls get me now. I'm like,
boy, they're in the prime.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my nerves is like not as good as they used to be on these fighting games.
So real quick,
I don't counter good.
So my daughter is playing Fortnite, right? And when you start on Fortnite on the map, there's 82 people on the map. You go down and basically you try to survive to the last person.
Okay.
So she's surviving at like 5 and 7. And she's 8. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm washed.
See, so they were right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my son, you said.
But the son,
he's like, it's kind of different. You got to kind of test him. You got to make him money.
Yeah.
My daughter's like, you got it.
You got it. That's right. Yeah.
Up on me.
You just got to be like me. All I do is play Dr. Mario. That's it. And that's just purely for the mental, just to like keep my mind.
Patterns and
yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shapes and
yep.
Puzzles.
Yep.
Nah, mm-hmm. I like the problem solving, and I'm like, okay, how do I get through here with this without being allowed this with these materials? That's my gaming type of style.
Yeah, I
love it.
I'd be too tired.
Oh, but now I'm watching my daughter play it.
I'd be too tired.
My favorite
Even
thing
though
is
I'm just sitting there, too tired.
Yeah. Now there are some of those like Fortnite can't do it.
Yeah,
like, there's too much. There's too many people online. No, kids start cursing at me. Nope, can't.
Yeah,
do it.
That was man. That's the thing too.
No game chat allowed in my house unless I'm on it.
I'm like, who talking? 2K. We had to go. You know, our friendship's been tested on some online chat.
Listen, like, nope, Adam. Listen,
nope. Got to mute it.
Me and this man are literally. This is the godfather to my children. And this basketball game, we cannot play.
We can't do it.
I get it.
We can't do it.
So do you have that with Jay?
Yes. NHL 93.
Hell no. Hell no.
Sega?
Yeah, Sega Genesis. And so we lived in a townhouse, 10 Hepworth Drive, Etobicoke, Ontario, right? There's 5 of us living in this half townhouse, right? So one bathroom. Anyway, so we would have these Genesis tournaments every weekend, and Jay.
Jay's Ian.
Ian.
I already see it. Yeah. I already see it.
The worst winner in the world, also the worst loser in the world.
Yeah.
Right? So he's that guy. But he would take the Ottawa Senators, who were rotten. But he figured out, like, he cracked the code.
Yep.
And he figured out how to win with them, which made it even more annoying.
Yeah.
Right? And then he'd gloat, and he'd just do his thing, right?
Yep.
So this one time he did something, and we actually got into a physical fight over a mini pool billiards table that was in the living room, and we're fighting over top of it. And our buddies are trying to break us up, and we're like, well, we're fighting over a video game here.
Yeah,
but
people don't understand.
It got real. However, we then played on up, up, down, down.
Yeah, same game.
The woods, same game.
Oh.
And for everyone to see.
Ah.
So when it counted,
I'm like, all pressure's on, red cam, red dots on.
He folded.
Okay, under pressure.
Uh huh.
Cooked.
That's how it be.
So we have a buddy, Ian. He, every Madden, this is Madden 24. We've been playing, us three, been playing this game since like Madden 8, 16, 17, 18, around that time period. And I used to wash Ian, get him out. But then he started, the more we started playing, the more he started figuring out the little glitches in the game that your players just can't do.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's like an invisible force field that just makes your players just do some weird
certain
shit.
Certain moves, certain wrap around the net.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And he cheeses it, and you know what's coming, and he still cheeses it.
Yeah.
And he had the nerve. You heard this.
Yep.
You heard this on the game chat, and I took it personal. I took it so personal. He said, you just mad because I passed you. Bitch.
Yo, Adam, this man is one of the most level-headed people I know. I'm learning from him to be more level-headed. This man got mad. And I'm like, if Swerve's getting mad, he said some shit.
I said, hold up, like,
they were bickering.
And now imagine women reacting this way. Never happened.
That's a whole other podcast.
It'd be on social media.
Now, reacting about other things, video games.
Yeah.
It was Beth that said you and her had talked when she was down doing commentary.
Because
I had no idea that you dug my stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so far removed from the indie scene at that point because I was also retired at that point. And really, when I retired, it was almost like a divorce or a death in a way where I had to get away from it.
Because
it's very painful to be close to it and not be able to do it. So that's why, like, when I'd get asked to be an agent or a producer or anything like that, I'd be like, I can't.
So it's a painful.
I can't do it, you know, because I want to be in there doing it. Yep. But she told me that. And like, even you did an interview with Mackenzie about the gear on the side. I never realized that that face on the side was from my gear
and
doing that years before. It just didn't dawn on me.
Like I said, man, like, a lot of the pieces are just like something that I pulled from, like, music. Once again, you said music.
Yeah.
Pull from that.
Yeah.
A film. And we're big film buffs. We go back and forth about that stuff all the time. And I'm like, okay, how do I make this like me? And it's not like, oh, how do I make it an African-American black cultural thing? No, it's just like, how do I just make it me?
You. Yeah.
And it's like that's, I feel like a lot of my look has become more organic, and we kind of fused together, and it's becoming my own thing. But a lot of it's inspiration from like things I grew up watching. It's like, sometimes it pays to just be on front of the TV as a kid all the time, because like that's kind of like got my creative juices just flowing.
Yeah,
that it hits your subconscious.
Yeah,
you'd be surprised.
Like, I don't know why I think like that. It's just because
I've
just grew up like watching it. And it's just like it becomes a part of you.
Man, I still remember the first clip I saw of wrestling ever, and I didn't understand what it was. It was Roddy Piper, it was Rick Martel from Portland, Oregon, and it was the promo where they smashed a beer bottle over the head. And I just went, I don't know what is happening, but I can't take my eyes off it. I couldn't even grasp what it was, but it was like, they're crazy, but I can't take my eyes off them. I didn't know these terms when I was this young, but like, they're charismatic, they're pulling me in.
Yeah.
And then I saw Hogan, I went, whoa, what is that?
This is
okay. And then you watch Rocky III and you go, whoa. And
it's like a real life superhero.
And I could go down to Maple Leaf Gardens.
And you can see this.
And maybe I can slap hands with one of them.
Yeah.
And I can't do that with the Incredible Hulk.
No.
I can't, you know, go find Thor and his hammer. That's not happening. Okay, well then, but I can go down because they're actual people. That to me was kind of mind blowing. And that was it. I was hooked.
Is there anybody that you think like influenced like who you are now?
It's strange because the influences have changed
for sure
over time. Now they'll always be the you know, Brett's always going to be an influence, and Sean will always be an influence, and Hogan was the reason that I fell in love with it initially. But Piper's an influence, and you know who's a really big influence now? Is Nick Bockwinkel.
Yes.
So Nick Bockwinkel for me is a guy that I watch and I'm just like,
him and Kurt.
I didn't fully appreciate it at the time, right? Mm-hmm. But now I go back and I watch, and he's also doing it at the age that I'm at now.
Interesting, okay.
So I'm watching him going, okay, all right. Interesting, and just the way he carried himself, his footwork, his mechanics, the demeanor.
Yeah.
You know, the promos, he was very intelligent. Then you have Bobby Heenan bouncing all over the place, yep. Who's, to me, the greatest manager of all time. And you put all of those things together, and now when I go back and watch it, I'm like, there's a match, him and Ricky Morton from the Houston Summit, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And it's just a master class of heel and babyface.
Yes.
It's so, so good. And I'll find myself now, that's what I do now. Like, I go back to stuff kind of under the radar. And just search it out. And Terry Funk in All Japan.
Man. You know, man. The physicality. That's what, like, I miss physicality like that bitch.
Yeah. And like so him and Hanson. And, oh,
yes. Just clubbing.
Yeah.
Just me clubbing each other.
Really, really, really fun stuff. So the influences, there's some that are always going to be there, but then. Again, like this week, my favorite match could be Kurt and Nick.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Next week, I'll watch Brett and Roddy again and go, wow.
WrestleMania 8.
Yes.
First wrestle match I ever saw.
Amazing. Amazing mm-hmm. match. The story, it was so simple.
I was a Jake the Snake guy, man. As I got older.
I love
older,
Jake. Yeah.
As I matured, I resonated with him so much more.
Yeah.
As I really started getting into the club, the art of pro wrestling. Yeah. Like,
and then there's guys too, like Barry Windham.
Barry Windham
was a guy that I always I kind of connected to because I was like, okay, he's like 6'7", but yeah. But he's long and, yeah. and his movement is so interesting, you know. Yeah. So I took elements of that, and that's really what I started to do is pulling from these influences and go, okay, but how do I make it my own? And if I put them all together in this melting pot, what comes out of that? And
guys like him glided.
Yeah. Across yeah, it was just. And Jake did too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it was it, perfect. Was the same thing. Henning, it could just. He was just so
effortless. Movement.
Effortless. Yes. You know. Yeah. It. So there's so much that influences me.
Yeah.
You know that I try and pull from, and what I've done with this AEW run is I told myself I'm going to try a move that I've never tried before. One move every match that I've never done before.
Wow.
We are watching.
And it can be, like last night I did a Davey Boy Power Slam. Never done one before.
What?
Just never done one. So I was like, I'm going to do a Davey Boy tonight.
I've been doing Power Slams.
Yeah. No, I've done the Rotation Power Slam.
Right, right.
But I've never done the Davey. So I was like, ah, that'll be tonight's move. Last week against Brody King, I've never done a Blockbuster. I'll try a Blockbuster. Just for myself, really. Yeah. Just to have fun and the challenge of it, because get off on challenges.
Yeah.
You know, challenges are very big for me in life. And I work best when I have a challenge that I have to try and conquer.
100%. 100%.
So that's the little things now. It's like, yeah. I want to set up that challenge to try a different move every match.
I love the fact that you're mixing up. Like we talked about this last week. It's just all the different talent, the mixing pool of AEW. It's a whole new refreshed feeling. So it feels like a whole new refreshed career.
It's a blank slate,
yeah.
Right? And that was the massively exciting part for me to coming over to AEW.
Yes.
And that's not a knock on WWE at all. It's just, mm-hmm. What else?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What else? Man, over there, like 98% of the people over there I've never worked. That's super exciting. That's challenging. That's a blank canvas. That's a blank slate to just try and create. So I look at it and it's like, okay, Suzuki 1 week, Penta another week, Cardona another week.
And I'm like glued. I'm
like just all over the place, which is so fun. It's like, I can get in there with Penta and I can do some of the head scissors that I used to do back in 93, 94 that I haven't done since then.
So
that match was phenomenal, by the way. Phenomenal.
It was a lot of fun just to dip into that stuff again, too. And then, you know, just doing old-fashioned head scissors, Brad Armstrong style.
Up stall, bring it down.
Not as good as Brad, but still.
Shoot.
But still.
Penta's amazing base, too.
Yeah,
I know. Make that thing look freaking pretty, brother.
So I've just been, man, I've been having so much fun, and I continue to look at this roster, and I'm just so stoked about the possibilities and the stories that can be told.
Man, just riches, a bag of just riches. Every room you walk into, the hallway is like, you know, we haven't We haven't interacted at all, but
yeah.
We could do this in a couple months. We could probably play this back to like, you just like, the dots just connect freely.
And even excitingly. Just like last night, we were at the Top Flight guys and just sitting down with them after and just saying, hey, if you implement this or try this or start thinking about this. And that to me has always been one of the most fun aspects of this. And I learned that from guys like Bad News Brown, who took me under his wing. Sweet Daddy Siki, who trained me, you know, Ron Hutchison, who trained me, you know, Bret Hart, who was so instrumental in helping me. Dory Funk, Tom Pritchard, all of these guys that took their time with me and showed me that when you get to a certain point, you got to do that too.
Absolutely.
And it's really fun. Really, really fun.
Well, man, that's our 45 minutes. That's it, man.
Really?
Yeah, we flew past it, man. We do this thing pretty good. 74 episodes. I think we got the hang of it at the grease.
Yeah, you never know, though. Like, sometimes, but that flew.
Oh, yeah. Exactly, man.
But, and it gives us time to maybe drop another one with each other.
There we go. Because we didn't get into it. Like,
there's a lot more we can discover with this man.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we have to have you on because I know you'd have a great time. And when we start spitballing, we start going and we really start like flowing. You don't want to stop.
Yeah.
You don't want to stop.
We'll do part D.
Like, we had 2 hours with Kenny, and he had a blast. So.
Yeah. So, all right. Man, so we'll do part two.
Definitely
we'll
got to do a part two. Thank you for coming through. We have a big night tonight.
Big one. So you got to go get to it.
I got to get to work. So, Adam Copeland, everybody. Teezy, you want to close this one? I got to get changed.
Go get it.
Yes. YouTube.com/SourceCityPodcast. Subscribe. Like. This is the legend. This is Adam Copeland. Be confident in everything you do.
He took off.
In peace.